Okay. Well, listen, we got to run. We only have a minute left, and I got to get out of here. But thank you so much for calling.
Yeah.
And thank you, everybody who called. And look forward to talking to you next week. This has been Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, Paul Rowland.
Have a good year, for the spirit of solstice is still living here. We'll count all our blessings while the mother lays down with snow as her blanket covering the ground. Thanks to the mother for the life that she brings, she'll waken to warm us again in the spring. The poor and the hungry, the sick and the lost, these are our children, no matter the cost. Come by the fire, the harvest to share, for the spirit of solstice is still living here. A fire is burning, the long night draws near. All who need comfort are welcome by me. Dance 'neath the stars and toast the past year, for the spirit of solstice is still living here.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station. KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
And good morning. It's 9:02. Your turn to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, Ani Haynes is right here with her guest John Young, who will join us by phone to tell us about an upcoming conference called Nature and Storytelling, and conveying the essence of what it is to be fully alive and connected with the world around us. At 9:30, we hear an excerpt from Radio EcoShock, featuring a teleconference hosted by Daphne Wysham about how West Coast cities are leading us out of the fossil age, even as they struggle with constant demand for more pipelines and ports. At 10 o'clock on Flashpoints, the topic is homeless, hungry, and under attack. Excuse me. At 11 o'clock on the Recovery Zone, host Stephanie Potter welcomes local interfaith leaders who are promoting understanding, tolerance, peace, and human rights. Sounds like a great idea. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today to join us. Stay tuned for Ani Haynes.
And good morning. Good morning, everyone. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I am Ani Haynes. This is Political Perspectives. And this morning, I am excited to be with John Young. He is a tracker, a mentor, and an author. He's also the co-founder of the H. Shields Institute. His work revolves around helping people live in their whole power through reconnection with nature. Thank you, John, for joining us this morning on KBOO.
Ani.
Good morning. Thank you
Good morning,
so much for being here.
Hey, I am sorry. I got queued into the phone system. I am John. I am not John Young. I just called, and I thought I was going to get a chance to talk on the last show. They were in a hurry, and I am not John Young. I am John E.
I see.
I am not John Young. They queued me in incorrectly. I apologize.
I see.
Well, I didn't want to just hang up. I wanted you to know and let you know that.
Well, John E., we thank you. We thank you for hanging out, and we thank you for being with us. And we're going to let you go right now, and we're going to get back to just a little more music as we get John Young. Take good care. And this is KBOO, your very own community radio station, where we will, in fact, be right back. And good morning. So once again, I want to remind folks you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani Raven Haynes, and this morning I'll be speaking with John Young. John, you are welcome to KBOO this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Ani. It's nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you with us. As I'd previously mentioned to the audience, you are a tracker, a mentor, an author, and the co-founder of the H. Shields Institute. And it seems as though your life's work has revolved around helping people really live in their whole power through reconnecting with nature. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. Thank you.
Okay. Has that connection that being a part of and within observing nature around you, has that always been an important part of your life?
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. That's, I guess when we're children and we're left to our own devices, which happened more back when I was a child in the 60s, that was a natural thing. You know, we just sort of follow our instincts and longing, and, you know, children are just, you know, they come born ready to connect to nature. So that was not unusual for me. A lot of children grew up that way. And then when I was 10 years old, I had a, you know, wonderful, coincidental, synchronistic encounter with a neighbor who happened to know how to keep a young child totally engaged and deeply connected to nature because he was mentored in that way as a boy himself. So he adopted me and took me on a journey. you know, kind of as an apprentice, which I wasn't even aware was happening, but it was so skillfully done, and that launched me into a career in natural history and anthropology, which, you know, asked the basic question, right, from that point at the age of 19 was, why are some cultures amazing at connecting children to nature and others aren't? And I wanted to understand what I could learn and bring forward to share widely with people globally so that we could really be effective at reconnecting people to nature. And that's pretty much all I've done, you know, for 36 years now. So I don't know any other life.
Right. It seems as though this, I mean, you had mentioned growing up in the 60s, being a child in the 60s. We were actually, that's my generation too. We were actually allowed to play outside. Mm-hmm. And it seems as though, whereas I would not consider, you know, a typical mainstream American culture of the 50s or the 60s or 70s really nature connected, certainly it seems as though children had much more chance to experience the outside world than they do now, 45, 50 years later.
That's very true. Of course, Richard Louv, in his book, Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, which went to become a bestseller in the New York Times in 2005, it was a story of that phenomenon, you know, that generation. You know, I was born in 1960, so people born, you know, at my time or before my time basically had a nature-connected childhood just by virtue of the fact that there wasn't anything better to do, in a sense. You know, we just...
Go play outside.
Yeah, the parents basically just said, go out, you're driving me crazy, get outside, I'll call you when dinner's ready. That was the nature connection policy of the time, right?
Sure.
And then, you know, with the advent, I think, you know, what a lot of the research is pointing at was when, you know, internet and the digital world became much more available, and TV went from 3 channels to endless numbers of channels and 24-hour news broadcasts and such like that, a whole generation of people grew up, you know, with a whole different perception of life, because they were mostly getting their input from the television, if you will, which, you know, in some houses, 3 televisions in the house all on at the same time, and, you know, children just grew up that way. Parents were more comfortable knowing that they were playing video games inside where they could see them, and, you know, there was sort of an innocent transition, because I don't think it was intentional to connect kids to nature prior to this period. It wasn't like people knew that it was good or bad. They just didn't really think about it. I think what happened was we generated a whole cultural change in our complete adoption of a digital environment, which in and of itself isn't a bad thing. But if it's all that a child has and they have no time outside, it's now actually really, you know, there's all kinds of research now that basically says this is really simply not good for a human being.
Right.
You know, Richard Louv's new book that's coming out in April is called Vitamin N. You know, and he just talks about the fundamental nourishment that the human psyche, neurology, everything, you know, gets from nature connection. It was very hard for us to recover that childhood in nature when the parents and grandparents, you know, 2 generations of loss of that experience don't know how to do it themselves, and they have all these fears that, you know, that no one can correct because no one's actually helped them connect to nature. So it's a very complex challenge, and, you know, it's involving a lot of really interesting collaboration and strategy now that's emerging to respond to that crisis. Really, it's literally a crisis, because it's a health crisis, it's a mental health crisis, it's a spiritual crisis for children and adults. You know, there's a lot of negative side effects of disconnecting from nature.
So let's talk about why, you know, why is connecting with nature essential to activate full human potential, as you say?
You know, there's a great book that points at this. It doesn't go into the depth that you want it to, but the story is really wonderful. Peter Gray's book, Free to Learn, page 22 through 24, roughly, it's the beginning of chapter 2. He speaks about the common human ancestor, you know, that all the genetic mapping that has been done. There's a great NPR show, a PBS show on this, that basically traces genetically through markers this giant tree of humanity that all goes back to one ancestral stock. And that ancestral stock has been living a particular way for 230,000 years. And the, you know, they're in the central Kalahari, and these are the San people. And it appears, you know, if you look at the San people kind of as a baseline, you know, what is human neurology designed to do? You know, you can't argue against this massive history. You know, it's so significant time-wise. You know, our westernization and modern times are barely a blip against 200,000 years. You know, so when you see that all healthy cultures that connect children to nature globally all share in common patterns and activities that link back to what the San people are still doing today in the central Kalahari, you know, you can more or less see the ergonomic truth of our need for nature connection. The children there are not only free to play in nature, but they're also then, you know, skillfully mentored to deepen certain patterns of relationship with nature that activate what, you know, what occupational therapists today call, you know, sensory process. You know, when our eyes, you know, when we're born, you know, we're sort of born with this potential for sensory integration, and the brain is more or less expecting that to occur, and it's actually causing the child to long for certain kinds of relationships with elders and adults that are going to be there to fill in the check marks that the brain is anticipating, right? They're like these time release activities. Once this is done, then this has to be done, then this has to be done. You know, and this is the vitamin N concept, really. You know, but there's actually a pretty clear pattern language to it, and modern people just simply just don't know that pattern language anymore. They don't remember it. But when you're with these, you know, these San children, you realize quickly that they don't suffer from any of the, you know, 100 disorders that modern children suffer from. They just simply don't exist in this population. So you can say, wow, look, here, if a child is brought along the journey of sensory integration, they have a visual experience of a bird making a loud noise just outside the house where they live, and their body tells them that bird is upset. You know, the sound tells them the bird is upset. They get a feeling in their gut, and they run to their grandmother and ask her, you know, what's going on? You know, the grandmother sees the body language of the child and drops down to the height of the child, actually instinctively goes down below eye level of the child, so, you know, puts the child in a place of power, if you will. And when you witness this with these old grandmothers, you're like, wow, that is so cool. You know, they really instinctively know to empower that child to explore the burst of feelings in their body. And then the grandmother will go with that child to see what the bird is saying, and she'll have the child imitate the bird's body language. They'll imitate the sound together. And in occupational therapy, this is called sensory process integration, sensory integration, making the eyes match with the ears, match with the body feelings, matched with imitation. It activates all these complex neurological systems. In the modern times, children have sights that come to them that don't integrate with sounds. You know, all the sight and sound stuff that comes at them is mostly commercially created and doesn't have the same sensory integration benefit that nature does, you know, because essentially, you know, we evolved in the context of nature. So everything in our neurological system is a direct reflection of primary relationship with nature. So if you take a child with sensory process disorders, and the statistics are alarming, something like 1 in 50 children now have this. In certain neighborhoods, 1 in 10 children have this. The response in modern times is medication or discipline.
Or at least, you know, in Western culture. I mean, modern times, we all live in the same year. But Western culture has made this decided shift away from the natural world and has sort of superimposed our commercial culture as the primary stimulus.
Yep, exactly. And my primary study has been in what I would call, you know, cultural mentoring or cultural anthropology, you know, and my primary research literally, I mean, I've basically been pulling out models of nature connection mentoring from various traditional cultures around the world, testing them as, you know, models, essentially, like taking them out of their specific oral tradition and their specific link to a language or a place, and just looking at them as sensory integration patterns and then applying these as exercises or games with modern children quickly reverses the impact of sensory process disorder, you know, because essentially the brain is starving for this. You know, it's like a nutrient that has been, the brain's been longing for, and children quickly heal, and the sensory process disorders reverse very quickly. You know, cultures are, you know, the role of a culture is to connect its people to nature, to each other, and to, you know, individuals to themselves. That's the primary role that culture plays as a verb, not as a noun. You know, it's a process of connection.
Uh-huh.
And so if you think about Western society, and I like to call it the postmodern Western world, I really don't think we deserve the word culture, because Western society has absolutely mastered the art of disconnection.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, so like, you know, 7-Up is the un-cola. You know, Western society is the un-culture.
You know,
and it's basically unconscious incompetence. You know, nobody really knows that that's happening, because people have long since forgotten that there's even another pattern possible. So, you know, now it's just about us waking up in these times, realizing the impact of disconnection, and then, you know, very consciously going into our incompetence and saying, where are my blind spots, and what do I have to recover in order to help children reconnect? You know, that's the big question of the day. What are all the ways that we can strategize and collaborate as communities and leaders and organizations and institutions to make this possible again? Yeah, like I said, it's a massive, complex challenge.
It is. And it seems, you know, sometimes I talk to people who live in the city, have very limited resources to make it outside, may not have their own transportation. How can people who are rural bound or who are urban bound actually reconnect and also stimulate their whole being in connection with the greater planet?
Right. Well, this isn't a cop out on my part, but I'm going to say that that's a very contextual question. You know, every single situation is going to require different responses, right? Because access to nature was pinned as the second biggest obstacle to nature connection. You know, if we don't have access to it, how are we going to connect to it, right?
Yep.
And I've been working internationally with community leaders and conservation groups using a model we call bird language, because it actually is very visible in the city. And it turns out that you know, children are very interested in bird language, even though they don't really have a reason to be. You know, there aren't really lions trying to eat us in the city. But there's an instinct in our body that responds to birds, because our ancient distant ancestors had to be very attuned to bird language from the youngest age in order to be safe, because of things like poisonous snakes, lions, leopards, hyenas. You know, you really needed to hear what the birds and other animals were saying in order to be safe. So all the songbirds still have to do that because of the existence of things like Cooper's hawks or peregrine falcons, you know, in Portland, for instance.
Sure.
And so it's very interesting to see that you can work with urban children in a mentoring model that gets them to pay attention to the bird language of the songbirds, who are worried about these aerial predators that really have nothing to do with them. But because of the sort of neurological predisposition of the children to need to know bird language, you know, it's an ancient instruction, it awakens something. And we use, in urban corridors, we very much use bird language to reconnect children to nature. It's a very effective and efficient way to do it. And once you've turned on awareness of bird language, you generally don't turn it off, and it starts to work on you even when you're not, like, at a nature connection program. You know, as you're walking down the city street, you notice the pigeon's behavior, the starling's behavior, and you stop, and you look around, you listen, you feel, and you do all that sensory integration stuff I was talking about earlier. So, you know, we've found that to be a very effective strategy.
Yeah, I think that sounds awesome. As somebody, you know, growing up in an urban environment in Portland in the, you know, late 60s, I've been watching birds since I was tiny, and just fascinated and observing of their behavior my entire life. It's true. I couldn't agree with you more, as a really great point to focus on that reaches us everywhere. There is no urban area without, you know, pigeons, and pigeons have their own language.
They definitely do. It's fun, you know, you know how children love to solve mysteries and problems?
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
You can, if you can connect them to the bird, the complex bird behavior as a sort of ecological puzzle to be solved, it never stops. You know, from sun up till sundown, there's always bird language, and I tell you, children just absolutely eat it up, and they love it, and then they start to pay attention differently. You know, it just activates that ancient neurological language. It's really, really interesting.
Absolutely. So there's this weekend event coming up in January at the Cedar Ridge Retreat Center in Vernonia. It's called Music, Nature, and Storytelling. Can you tell us what's happening at that weekend?
Sure. This is a favorite program. I've run this in Europe, in Germany, a couple of times over the last several years, and it's been wildly popular and successful. And essentially what we're doing is using kind of an artist retreat approach, where we work in small groups and people go out to places in nature that they adopt for the weekend, and they disperse from their small group and they sit quietly and they turn on all their senses and they just let things come through. You know, it sort of activates their creative center. And when things come through, people write beautiful poems when they're inspired by nature. They write beautiful songs. They hear songs on the wind, if you will. We teach them the techniques of catching song, you know, of catching imagery, of gathering it and working it into, you know, basic, you know, poetic structure. And then people come back into their small groups and they share their experience with each other. They might end up composing a group piece, or they help each other compose individual pieces. We come back together as a whole group. We share what came out of the small groups. I'll often bring in a song or a story from, you know, another person who did this somewhere else at some other time, you know, a really inspiring nature connection song that comes out, and then that really moves everyone, and they get more excited, and they go back out, and they repeat that, you know, and we do that several times over the weekend, and usually some really beautiful gems of new writing, new creativity comes through. But what it really does is it activates a pattern for people that allows them to go away confident that they could be song catchers or storytellers or, you know, artists or musicians. You know, it just really activates a deeper sense of connection with the muse, if you will.
Absolutely. And for people who would like more information about that or to register, I understand the registration deadline is coming up very soon.
Mm.
Is,
you know,
there?
I think you'll find that on 8Shields PDX, the information there.
Uh-huh. 8Shields or 8SPDX.com.
Is that what it is? It's 8SPDX.com.
I do believe so.
It's also, I know that you could search it as the number 8 followed by the word Shields, S-H-I-E-L-D-S, PDX, and you'll find access to that website for sure.
Excellent. John, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning here on KBOO. If you could just, for our last question, look at the connection between the reconnection with nature and storytelling.
Mm. Well, I could go on for days.
Yes.
And I will when I come there in January. But the you know, human beings are amazing storytellers when they activate that capacity. And, you know, I've been speaking a lot about sensory integration. You know, the ultimate act of sensory integration is telling stories with all of your sensory memories, bringing in smell, sight, sound, taste, feeling, emotion, everything, and really putting yourself back into a moment and then bringing that moment to an audience that's engaged, you know, and that is one of the most profound activators and integrators of our neuroprocessing. You know, just it really awakens, you know, this true, natural, beautiful power inside of a human being. You know, storytelling is a great gift to humanity, and, you know, we don't practice it anywhere near enough. It's just a magnificent gift to us.
All right, John Young, thank you so much for joining us this morning here on KBOO. He will be in the area with this workshop, Music, Nature, and Storytelling. Coming up, you can get more information about that again at 8spdx.com. KBOO is also a co-sponsor of that event. You can find more information on the right side of our homepage at kboo.fm. John, thanks so much for being with us, and happy solstice to you. Speaking of reconnecting with nature and looking at seasons in the year a little differently.
All right. Well, thanks for taking time with me today. I really appreciate the opportunity to share.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay, take care.
And stay tuned for the rest of the incomparable radio zine and political perspectives here on KBOO, your community radio station. ¶¶
It's 9:30. You're tuned to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Next up, we have the second part of Political Perspectives this morning, an excerpt from Radio EcoShock featuring a teleconference hosted by Daphne Wysham about how West Coast cities are leading us out of the fossil age, even as they struggle with constant demand for more pipelines and ports. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.